I am going back in our study to the middle of lesson 185. This is where we began our commentary on the movie It's a Wonderful Life. I would like to skim through a number of the things we noted just to reorient you to what's going on in that movie that we're using to dramatize principles of the computer of divine decrees. Also, as I go away for a week, this might be an opportunity for some of you who have not seen the movie to actually rent it and watch it. The study will take on a little bit more of a meaning for you if you've seen that movie. Now, for those of you who have seen it, the movie starts with citizens of Bedford Falls offering intercessory prayer for George Bailey, who has come upon hard times. And I might remind you that we studied intercessory prayer as an introductory subject to our study. And Jesus Christ is instructing Seraph rank angel Joseph to assign poor savant messenger Clarence Oddbody the task of saving George Bailey's life. And we had to take time to study the Angelic College of Heralds so that you would understand from the standpoint of the movie who Jesus Christ is and who this poor savant messenger is. And you are free to go back and get those tapes. There is a very important question that I think sets the stage for what is going to go on in the movie that is posed in that initial dialogue between Clarence, Jesus Christ, and apparently a seraph-ranked angel, Joseph. Clarence asked the Lord this question when he says, I need you to go and help save George Bailey's life. And he says, is he sick? And the Lord responds, no, worse. He's discouraged. Well, this discouragement indicates what's going on in the soul of George Bailey on that particular Christmas Eve of 1945. We identify discouragement from the dictionaries because we're going to see that that discouragement actually is a part of a simmering bitterness that George has going on in his soul. Discouragement is a mental attitude that finds its origin in fear. According to Oxford, it means to lose confidence and courage. It is a depression of spirit with regard to action or effort. And then Oxford defines depression of spirit having to do with being cast down mentally, to be dispirited, dejected, or brought low. That's the mental attitude that we find for George Bailey as the movie begins. It's helpful to remember that as the movie opens, we hear prayers that are lifted for George on Christmas Eve after he has encountered the events that led to his discouragement. And the first half of the movie really takes note of many of those things. George has reacted to these outside adversities, finally with fear, followed by a cluster of sins associated with both the emotional and arrogance complexes of sins. But before Clarence, that's the angel, can help resolve George's problems and their denouement, Clarence must first be briefed about George's life up to that point. The briefing is accomplished by God assessing details from George Bailey's prom chip. And this is one of the things about the movie I think that is so helpful in understanding the computer divine decrees, is that drama enables us to imagine how things might work and how things might occur. And as this explanation goes forth, we're going to see God and the seraph-ranked Joseph communicate concepts out of the prom chip of George Bailey. The briefing begins with events that took place during George's childhood and continues until the moment his discouragement drove him to the brink of suicide. Quite a number of events. Some go all the way back to his childhood, some pre-marriage, some post-marriage, and then, of course, the big event. Now, certain principles from the Doctrine of Divine Decrees are evident. I won't review those for you at this point because we will repeat them as they become pertinent. But foreknowledge, obviously, is a very big concept in this whole idea. And it may be described in finite terms if we imagine God watching a videotape of human history. God is able to view the tape of foreknowledge, which plays back what He decreed to be actual. God, who has no limitations in time, can look forward into human history and understand it, the future, as perspicuously as he does the past. And foreknowledge enables him to do that. This has been placed into the computer and, in fact, is a printout from the computer. Now, as the video of human history is played out in what we refer to as time, the day has arrived when extreme testing comes upon George Bailey. It is important to remember that in human history, the sovereignty of God and the free will of man coexist by divine decree. Had a discussion the other day with the phone man. I finally got my ADSL line on Friday. And by the way, for those of you who get class notes sent out ahead of time, I can be a little more efficient with that now. Everything went south on me about a week ago, and I had to struggle through that period. But with the ADSL line, I am wired for the 21st century. So I have no excuses after this. But the phone man was there, and he saw my office, and he said, you must be a pastor. And I said, yes. And so we got to talking. He goes to a non-denominational Bible church in another county, and he wanted to take up a discussion on theology. And he wanted to know what the theology was. What were we like? We're like Baptists or Presbyterians or the E-free, that kind of thing. And I said, well, you know, we're not really like the E-frees, because a lot of those guys get involved in five-point Calvinism, but they have some real good theology otherwise. And I say, they're up in Deerfield, the seminary is. And I said, we're really more oriented to Dallas Theological Seminary down in Dallas. And I said, we just believe faith alone and Christ alone. He bobbed his head, yes, that's right. And he says, but I have to agree with the five-point Calvinist. And I thought, oh me. But the conversation went fairly well. But he did not in any way relent from the idea that human volition contributes nothing to the angelic conflict. And I didn't bring up the imperative mood thing because I knew it would be a waste of time, but I don't know how volitional choices can be placed in front of Adam and Esau and their volition having nothing to do with the fall. I don't understand how volitional choices mandates, believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and you will be saved, how that means human volition doesn't contribute anything to this idea. But nevertheless, that was that. And this is much like watching a videotape where all of these decisions are put in a special prom chip. And you see the free will of man is recorded there, and the sovereignty of God is on the other side of the computer. God's going to accomplish his objective, but he will do so while at the same time recognizing human free will to go against his will, to go against his plan. So it's important to remember that. Therefore, it's important to take into consideration what was decreed in eternity past in the ROM chip. That's the sovereignty of God. Now, George is a believer in Jesus Christ. At least we're going to pretend he is. If you've got God sending a guardian angel to earth to manage the affairs of a certain individual, which is all a legitimate concept, we have guardian angels. And if George Bailey is the recipient of that kind of service, so to speak, then he has to be a believer. So we assume that. He has a strong spiritual life based on confidence in the Word of God, and that gave him courage toward life and circumstances, and we see that on occasion. But that courage is going to be tested and therefore ultimately neutralized by fear. Now, God has offered the royal family a weapon called intercessory prayer. This is where you pray for other people, and that is a very important part of your spiritual life. Now, when Spirit-filled believers know of other believers who are involved in certain battles of the angelic conflict, they are mandated to pray for that person. For example, 1 Timothy 2:1, first of all, I urge that entreaties and prayers, petitions and thanksgivings be made on behalf of all men. And so the citizens of Bedford Falls did this, and God processed those prayers in eternity past, inserted the answer into the ROM chip. The answer to the prayer, then, is the provision of a guardian angel. Now, that's in the movie. We have guardian angels anyhow because we're believers in Jesus Christ. Now, Clarence is not only to deliver George from his attempted suicide, but also counsel him about the historical impact every believer has in the perfect plan of God. And obviously, through the movie, we see the concept of invisible historical impact on the part of one believer in a small community called Bedford Falls. And if you extract that influence, we see how the whole town goes right down the tubes. A very good illustration, then, of historical impact in the movie. Now, in order for Clarence to understand who he is about to save and counsel, God himself offers a briefing that includes several of the following events. As a boy, George and his friends were snow sledding down a hill and across a frozen lake. George's younger brother Harry went too far out onto the lake and fell through thin ice. George jumped in to save him, but in so doing caught a bad cold and subsequently lost hearing in his left ear. A tragedy, I'm sure, for his parents, having a semi-deaf child at that age, but it was all a part of the perfect plan of God that we see brought out very vividly later on. Henry F. Potter is introduced as the richest and meanest man in the county. When you hear these phrases here, I'm quoting right from the soundtrack. He owns a factory which employs a large percentage of local residents, with most living in company housing. Emil Gower is presented as the town druggist from whom young George worked as a soda jerk. One day, George learned that Mr. Gower's son, Robert, had died suddenly of influenza while away at college. While seeking to offer his employer comfort, George observed the despondent druggist mistakenly fill a prescription for a sick child with poisonous pills. Unable to communicate successfully with his boss about the error, George sought counsel from his father, but he, Peter Bailey, was tied up in a meeting with Mr. Potter. Later, when Mr. Gower learned of George's failure to make the delivery of the prescription, he became violent, striking George about the head and again injuring his left ear. It was in this scene that we see George Bailey completely submit to his unfair and unjust boss. He is the victim here. Now today, a child that was treated the way George Bailey was at that age would have run home to mama, and there would have been lawsuits, and the man would have been in jail. And it probably would have happened then, because we learn later on in the movie that the man went to jail, and we'll note why he went later on. But the reason was is he poisoned a child with a bad prescription. It wasn't from cold cocking George, it was because the prescription got through. But you see the difference. What did one young fellow do? He defused a very volatile situation that could have resulted, according to the movie, in the man being sent to prison. So he showed a willingness to endure physical abuse out of respect for Mr. Gower's grief over the sudden death of his son. That's showing compassion. He pled with his boss not to strike his ear again, but also sought to comfort him in his loss. He promised him that he understood and would never mention the incident to anyone. George kept his word to Mr. Gower. He never mentioned it again. He never held a grudge nor sought revenge. That's brought out in the movie. They were very close friends as adults. He and Mr. Gower maintained that friendship as if the event had never occurred. Young George Bailey, therefore, provides a wonderful illustration of the royal law, orientation to authority, compassion at the loss and grief of others, flexibility under pressure, kindness, thoughtfulness, respect, and personal integrity. George had a willingness to do the right thing, even though it meant personal difficulty for himself. He showed responsibility by refusing to deliver what he knew was a deadly prescription. He sought adult advice, and when he couldn't find it, he had the character to stand by his own decision. Finally, the additional damage to George's ear would go undetected, since he had lost his hearing in the rescue of his brother Harry from the icy lake. Now, here are some principles that we can see from this story so far. No event, no matter how small, can be misplaced in the decrees or ignored altogether without having profound impact on all events. Secondly, the decree of God is His eternal and immutable will regarding the future existence of events which will happen in time, plus the precise manner and order of their occurrence. Note how when he went for help, he couldn't find it, because his father was tied up. Note how he found the telegram on the cash register alerting him to why Mr. Gower was having a bad day. And he instantly oriented to why the man made that tragic mistake with the prescription. All of these things happen sequentially, and they're in the decrees. Another principle, by the decree God has rendered certain all events of the universe, not the smallest incident or the slightest fact was unknown or unrecognized by him. And when George Bailey went to ask his father's advice about what to do with a poisonous prescription, Mr. Bailey was tied up in a discussion with Henry Potter about a loan the building and loan had at Potter's bank. Potter was playing hardball, and young George interrupted at a most inopportune time. Consequently, his father told him to please save his question for later. Well, see, later won't do. He has to know now. So with that, George went back to the pharmacy, and that's when the confrontation occurred between him and Mr. Gower. Now, at the end of all of this, when Mr. Gower realized his error and sought George's forgiveness, that is when George promised to never speak of the incident again. See, this respects Mr. Gower's privacy and shows great flexibility in understanding his motivations of the day. The blow to George's ear had minimal impact, since George had already lost his hearing anyhow. So no one would guess he had been abused. Pa Bailey's meeting with Mr. Potter was so timed that George could not reveal to his father the problem with the prescription. The two incidences would have destroyed Emil Gower's reputation as a druggist and branded him as an abuser of children. Even the sudden loss of his own son would not have been an acceptable excuse for the loss of one child's life who would have been unwittingly given poison by his parents and the physical abuse of another. Instead, the personal integrity of a teenage boy saved Mr. Gower's reputation, while the divine decrees took into consideration the precise manner and order of how these seemingly independent events played out. That's the divine decrees for you. And Jesus Christ controls everything, and they're in the computer. Principle. Omniscience knows every thought, decision, and action in human history, how they relate to each other, and how they relate to all the possible alternatives. And we'll see the alternatives when George Bailey disappears later in the movie. Another principle, every cause and effect is related to another cause and effect, and to another, and to another. Remove one person from history, there's a huge inventory of cause and effect concepts that are extracted that have definite impact on history. Another principle, in the case of every free will act of a moral agent, the decree itself provides at the same time the following concepts. Now these sound a little technical, but they help you understand the decrees. The agent shall be a free agent. This gets back to volition. You have your own free will, and you are accountable for that. And God permits you to have your own free will. Therefore, you are a free agent. Secondly, the antecedents and all antecedents of the act in question shall be what they are. Once something happens, that's it. It's part of a system of cause and effect. It becomes part of the basis for other things happening down the line. Everything has antecedents. So we note volition, then we note cause and effect. Next, all present conditions of the act shall be what they are. In other words, God enables us to orient to reality and to face the facts. You can't change facts. You cannot change history. So all present conditions shall be what they are. If our arrogance or ignorance led us to make decisions which overlook certain facts, those facts nevertheless are real. The act shall be perfectly spontaneous and free on the part of the agent. That shows self-determinism. And finally, the act shall be certainly future. It will definitely take place at a certain time after the decree is given. And so throughout the film, the relationship between George Bailey and Emil Gower is one that should be discussed with your children, if you have any, and you should emphasize the doctrinal applications and character traits exhibited by both of them. Now, in the prom chip review of George Bailey's life given by the King of Arms, Joseph, to Clarence Oddbody, Joseph switches from George's childhood to his adult life, and we become acquainted with several individuals. Ernie the cab driver, Bert the policeman, Victoria, who is a sort of airheaded childhood sweetheart, classmate kind of a person, and his brother Harry. George is making plans to attend college after a vacation to Europe. Now, get this. This is where the bitterness comes in. He has got it in his mind that when he graduates from college, he's going to go to Europe, travel about from high school, and come back, go to college, and become an architect. And he doesn't get to do that. Everything gets shut down for George. And that makes him angry, and bitterness develops. So it's important to see these things. And he's sitting around the dinner table with his father. And his father is expressing hope that George will return to Bedford Falls following graduation and run Bailey Brothers Building and Loan. And George has these high ambitions, and he says, no, I'm going to go to Europe. I'm going to visit some places over there, and then I'm going to go to university and study architecture. George tells his father, in addition to that I can't be tied down to a desk job. See, I can't, I won't. I'm not going to. And you see what he winds up doing. Why? God kept him there to do his duty for historical impact, etc. You will know the plan of God quite often because the doors you try to open will break your nose when you try to walk through them. And when a door opens, dear friends, it opens wide. And it is a push from the rear. And you begin to sprint through it because you know it's there. And George tried to get out of the door leading to outside Bedford Falls, and it wouldn't open. It would not open. And so he says this to his father, though. I'm not cut out for a desk job. And his dad says, well, you know, George, you're right. You ought to get out of this town because no one can make it in Bedford Falls unless he's willing to crawl to Potter. Well, is there someone who can neutralize Potter? Is there one man who can do it? Free to now decide his future, though, George decides to attend the party and dance at Bedford Falls High School, where Brother Harry is about to be graduated. It is here that he is reintroduced to his future wife, Mary Hatch. Bedford Falls is like any small town. You know everybody in it, but he hadn't seen Mary Hatch for years or even thought about her. Now he sees her as an adult woman, and he is attracted to her. He is immediately attracted right there on the dance floor, someone whom he had known as a child but had not paid much attention to over the years. Mary and George were immediately attracted to each other, although George denied it at first, and that is not unusual. George had set logical and attainable goals for his life, objectives for himself. However, he was about to learn that he was pursuing a false destiny, but he doesn't know that right now. And when you're pursuing a false destiny, you don't know it. You have to be taught in the decrees that where you're going is the wrong way. Now, you don't have the signs like they have on the freeway. If you take the wrong turn there, there's great big red signs that say, wrong way. We don't have those signs posted at your front door every day. The signs are in here, and you have to convert them to your soul. And they tell you the wrong way. George didn't pay attention at first. So in the ROM chip, God has willed the highest and best for us. But while in the prom chip, we have the option of willing the worst for ourselves. Volition is free. And it was about this time that the decrees presented George with a series of circumstances that would reveal to him his true destiny. A series of circumstances. He has to gain this information gradually. As with all of us, this conversion of thought takes time and is wrought with a number of circumstances that are at first viewed as hindrances to one's own goals and objectives. And when you run into that, you often say, I just can't get this accomplished. It's the devil's world. Satan's after me. It's all these other people's fault. Nobody lets me get done what I want to get done. Duh. Maybe you're not supposed to do that. Think about that just for a moment. And of course, you know, you say, well, what if it's just testing? Get this in your head. You can tell testing. When testing comes, you'll know it. When punishment comes, you will know it. Because if you keep a clear inventory, look, if you keep a clear inventory of confessed sins, clear inventory, confession alone to God alone consistently, how is God going to be punishing you? And very little punishment for people who are in the divine power system. Now, sometimes punishment continues, the suffering continues after rebound, but it is punishment turned to suffering for blessing. So that's rare. A little bit of that goes on. But if you're clear on confession, then you can evaluate the circumstances of your life from a clear conscience that this is just part of the ebb and flow, the give and take of the angelic conflict. Well, for the positive believer, there is a transformation of thought that occurs when you are confused, and this conversion takes time, and doctrine is what leads the way. And therefore, God desires for George Bailey to get involved in His perfect plan for George's life. George's transformation of thought was therefore influenced by the following events. Now, maybe some of these could be used by you as an example. These are common and typical things, many of them are, and you can say, well, that happened in my life. And then maybe you can pause to think, how did that change my life, for the better or for the worse? His father died of a stroke the night of the high school celebration. He had the conversation with his father. He said, I just can't have a desk job. And his dad said, fine, you ought to get out of this town. He dismisses himself and goes to the party. And that night, Mr. Potter dies of a stroke. Had to cancel his trip to Europe in order to help organize the affairs of the building and loan. He was free of the building and loan. He was about to be free. And then his father died on him. Do you think he's mad with his father in any way about this? See, he was free to leave. Oh, this happens. When a spouse dies, a couple who love each other dearly and in the proper ways, as per the mandates we've just reviewed, when one spouse dies, the other one often for a period of time is mad with them for leaving me here. Don't you leave me here like this. And they would not admit to that, but it is true. They're upset with a person for dying on them. And here this man died on him, and he's got to stay in Bedford Falls and do more building and loan stuff. He doesn't want to. He wants to go to Europe. And so we're building up this mental attitude here that's going to turn into bitterness eventually, and it will explode when the proper pressure comes down. Now, Mr. Potter, who was a member of the board, offered a motion to close down the Building and Loan Association. This is when Mr. Bailey dies. And Potter, he's on the board, he said, let's shut this down. This is a worthless organization. The board voted Potter down, but with the contingency that George Bailey would take his father's place as executive secretary of the association. If not, the board would vote with Potter to close it down out of a sense of duty, and so that Potter would not gain total control over the economics of the community, George reluctantly agreed to accept the position. The embers of bitterness are still glowing. As a result, he gave the money he had saved for college to his brother Harry. So here's his new escape route. He's going to let Harry help him out of Bedford Falls. He is going to give his education money to Harry and let Harry go to university in his place. George told his brother that 4 years later, upon graduation, Harry could come and relieve him of his duties at the building and loan. By that time, George would have saved enough money for him to then go to university and escape Bedford Falls. But while away at college, Harry met and married Ruth Dakin, the daughter of a wealthy businessman from Buffalo. He owned a glass factory and offered Harry a job in research. George privately asked Ruth, well, what kind of opportunity is this offer to Harry like? Is this a good opportunity? And she insisted that yes, if he took it, it would be an excellent chance for a bright future for Harry. And so with that, George encouraged Harry to accept the offer from his father-in-law. Now, based on things George will say while in a state of carnality later in the movie, we may conclude that he is inwardly angry over this series of events. Put yourself in his place. Your father dies, you're back at the building and loan, your trip to Europe is canceled, you can't go to university, you give all of your money that you were going to use to your brother and let him go. And so it caused him to alter all of his plans for the future and as a result place him in Bedford Falls, not only for 4 years but for the rest of his life. Loyalty to his father's memory, a sense of obligation toward the working class of the community, and a self-imposed responsibility to keep Henry Potter from running the entire town enabled George to suppress his feelings about his plight. So he's got all these things suppressed now. The embers are covered up with that thin facade of ash. But results in the chronic sin of bitterness and all that is needed for its smoldering embers to billow is for a spark of undeserved suffering or unfair circumstances to provide the catalyst. In time, an outside adversity will do just that, and the embers will flare in the form of the three arrogant skills. Everybody thinks George Bailey's such a fine guy, and he is. He is a fine guy. But you never realize how into the cosmic system he is until you begin to analyze his character. And then you see, we are no different from George Bailey. George Bailey, you see, was an average, everyday guy trying to do the best he could. And on the surface, he was out there being Mr. Good Citizen. But underneath, we see sequentially from these events that he is ginning up a great deal of bitterness, and that's going to explode. So he's going to get into the three arrogant skills. At the moment, his frustrations have not taken him to that level. He is disappointed that once again his plans to escape from Bedford Falls have been defeated. Subconsciously, he has a desire to establish a relationship with Mary Hatch, but he doesn't want to commit to a relationship under the current circumstances. I need to wait 4 years. I need to go to college 4 more years. Then I can think about marriage, but not now. Nevertheless, he goes by her house, and when she sees him from an upstairs window, she invites him in. He visits briefly, but since he is not in a conversational mood, he decides to leave as Mary's suitor, Sam Loudmouth Wainwright, calls from New York City. Sam has one of those overly friendly, boisterous types of personalities that assumes everyone likes him, but few do. Nevertheless, he got into plastics just at the right time and calls Mary, get this, to talk her into investing in his plastics business. Well, suddenly George comes back inside. Note one of these very insignificant events that are precisely placed into the divine decrees. George comes back inside because he forgot his hat. And Sam insists he get on the telephone with him and Mary. And Sam offers George the opportunity to get in on the ground floor of the plastics business, but George shows absolutely no interest. Now, as the scene develops, George becomes more and more interested in Mary's presence rather than Sam's offer. And they're both all snuggled up to the phone receiver. Remember those that you held this way? Except she's holding it this way. And here's George over here, and he's listening in. He forgets about what old Sam is saying. He begins to look at Mary. Hello. Reluctantly, he begins to submit to his suppressed attraction for Mary. So he's in the attraction stage here. Suddenly, he grabs Mary, tells her he is not interested in ground floors or plastics or marriage. I don't want to marry anybody. I want to do what I want to do. Oh, it's all coming out now. I want to go to Europe. I want to go to school. I want to be an architect. I want to be out of Bedford Falls. I can't marry you and do those things. I want to do what I want to do. Then he grabs her and kisses her. What's George fighting here? His brothers just escaped Bedford Falls with a great opportunity in Buffalo. After George had planned for 4 years for Harry to replace him at the building and loan. Mary is back from college. She's back in town. And he is secretly in love with her, but he knows a commitment to marriage will mean a middle-class lifestyle for them as he is forced to stay and manage the family business, a building and loan association. In frustration, he tells us what's eating him. He wants to do what he wants to do. I don't want to do the plan of God. I'm not doing that today. Maybe later, but not now. I've got it all worked out what I'm going to be doing. Now, can God stop you from doing what you say you're going to do? In spades. He wants to visit Europe, go to college, move out of Bedford Falls. He knows if he marries Mary, none of that will happen, and I can't do what I want to do. So what's the solution to this? He marries Mary. Principle. There are three stages in a man-woman relationship: attraction, compatibility, and rapport. There are two periods in the relationship if it continues through all three stages. There is first romance, and then secondly, marriage. Now, this is a good place to stop. It's where I wanted to be at the end of this day. First session, next Sunday, I want to briefly review, as I intended to do so from the beginning, the three stages of marriage, and then move into a brief review of the passages that document the right man, right woman relationship. We will be able to do that in the first session, and then we will resume our analysis of the movie in the second session. Remember, no Bible class on Tuesday and Thursday. Heavenly Father, we are grateful to you for the power of the Word and our opportunity to take its concepts and principles and make applications in so many ways so that these ideas and doctrines become illuminated in our mind's eye. It is our prayer that as we continue this study, that we would become better acquainted with how you manage history, how our volition is truly free, but how you have permissive will and overruling will and directive will for our lives, and thus you control history on our behalf. And if we're positive to these things, we can learn to submit to your plan, for it is to our advantage. Motivate and encourage us by these things as we lift our prayer in the name of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen. You're dismissed.